7:53, 8 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock. Bill Thomas, Simsbury Carr, and Fly-In Show packed them in every year they do it. And Dan noticed this, and he said, Brad, he said, now, Bill actually builds airplanes. I said, yeah. He said, why don't we get him in here some morning and have him build us an airplane? And how do you do it? I can't believe this, but he builds them.
Well, this is in the event you want to build an airplane, Brad. But, Bill, welcome to our Touch Points Rehab interview chair, and good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. How are you?
Okay.
First of all, how'd the Simsbury show go?
It was terrific. We had the biggest crowd ever, I think. Started off a little foggy in the morning, but became actually a very nice, hot, sunny day.
How many do you have?
It's hard to guess, Judge, but Brad, but about 15,000, possibly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's terrific. How long have you been building airplanes?
I think I built my first one starting back in 1980, and I've built two since.
Two airplanes,
yes.
You have built?
Yes.
How do you go about building an airplane?
There are two basic ways to do this. You can buy a kit, which is by far the most common, because you're supplied with all the parts and, in some cases, the tools and the plans and the instructions. The other way, which is much harder, is that you buy just the plans, and then you go find all of the parts. And if you're a little bit of a scrounge, that's a fun part of the project. But building from a kit is by far the most common.
Now, how big are these airplanes?
They are real, full-sized airplanes. They're not model airplanes. They're not ultralights.
You're kidding.
No, they're the same size as a Piper or a Cessna or some of the common name airplanes that are built in factories.
Where do you build them?
Well, the term home building will tell you most of the answer. Most people will build them in a garage or in a basement. Of course, the joke is if you build it in the basement, can you get it out?
Yeah.
But the main distinction is that they are built other than in a regular factory. That's the... Mm-hmm. Where the term comes from.
Where did you build yours?
I built mine in the basement, and yes, I did get it out.
Now, do you fly these?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You mean you start from scratch.
Yep.
You build the airplane. It's
yep.
a regular size.
Yep.
And you fly them.
Yes, although it's not quite as simple as just building it and then jumping in. There's a very rigorous process that the Federal Aviation Administration insists that you go through. While you're building the airplane, they inspect it periodically. When you finish the construction, they want to see photos of what you've done. And they then sign you off for about typically 40 hours of test flying time, which you have to do and keep records. And at the end of that time, they inspect again. And if everything's okay, then you're cleared to fly and the airplane becomes the same as any other general aviation airplane.
And you have done that?
Yes. But so have a lot of people. Believe it or not, there are almost 30,000 home-built airplanes flying
30,000?
Yeah.
How many in Connecticut?
I have no idea. Yeah. But
is there a club at all or in Connecticut?
The answer is yes, if you're referring to the Experimental Aircraft Association, which is one of the largest aviation groups in the world, really. And there are chapters of the EAA all around the country, including a number in Connecticut, and we have one at Simsbury Airport. So anybody that's doing home building is wise to attach themselves to one of these chapters where you have other people that have done it and they can get advice for you.
How long does it take you to build one?
It takes as long as it takes. There's kind of a typical time, I would say. Most people will spend 1,800 maybe to 2,000 hours, man hours of time.
Wow.
Calendar time is a little hard to say for sure because that depends on how much time you have to devote to it. In my case, both the airplanes that I built were over a span of about 5.5 calendar years with 1,800 hours worth of man time in it. So that comes out to an average of something like an hour a day. Doesn't break down that neatly, but that's...
Did you fly both of them?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Do you still own them?
I sold both of those, and I now own a home-built airplane that was built by somebody else.
Really? Oh, we have a lot to talk about as far as building and piloting and all of that coming up in the next half hour, Brad. I know we're hitting the top of the hour here.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you. This is, boy, that's really something.
It's awesome.
Really something.
Yep.
Okay, Bill, glad you're with us. 8 o'clock in the morning, and we will be back. Stay with us. 10 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, and we are trying to build some airplanes.
And Bill Thomas is joining us again. People remember him from the Simsbury Car and Fly-In Show.
Big time.
The big show that attracted thousands last month. And, Bill, you've built two airplanes, as you said. And it's a rigorous process in that you've got to be inspected by the federal government. Mm-hmm. So talk a bit more about that.
During the construction phase, you have to keep very strict records of what you do. And typically that includes photographs. Some of the parts are enclosed by skin and you can't see what's underneath after that part is finished. So you need to take photos of the interior parts as well as the exterior parts as well. And you keep a written record, too, so that when you get to the end of construction, you can show all of that material to the inspector, who can't, by that point, look inside, but can see all your documentation. And if he or she is satisfied at that point, then you're cleared for the test period.
How long does it take before, and this is a regular size airplane.
Yep.
How long does it take before they say, okay, Bill, you can fly it?
It takes a certain amount of air time, which can be spread over any number of calendar days, weeks, or months, but it's typically 40 hours of flying. So if you do fly an hour a week, it's going to take you 40 weeks.
Sure.
But you've got to do that 40 hours, and then the inspector comes back again and looks at the airplane to make sure that it's still sound, but also looks at the test materials that you've collected during that 40 hours. You have to show what the performance of the airplane is, how fast it goes, the stalling speeds, and all kinds of other criteria. Wow. So you are a little bit of a test pilot. I almost hate to use that term because it implies, you know, the kind of thing that you see in the movies and crashes and everything. It's not like that, but you do have to go through some definite test steps to demonstrate that the airplane's okay.
Explain. Have you ever had a problem?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, not really. No, okay. Not really.
Well, explain for our audience who are uninitiated stalling speeds.
An airplane stalls when it is flying so slowly that there is not enough flow of air over the wings to generate lift, and the airplane can literally fall because it's not producing enough lift as required. So every airplane has a different stalling speed, and you need to find out what that is, and that depends on the weight that's on the airplane as well. So this involves some testing, and you just explore that envelope. All pilots are trained in how to stall an airplane. It's actually a very safe maneuver. People hear that word and they say, that's, you know, you don't want to stall. And it's true that you normally don't, but it is something that pilots do all the time in training, and so there's nothing inherently dangerous about it. But you do have to do that with your new home-built airplane.
Did you always want to build an airplane? Was this a dream of yours?
I built model airplanes, which is how lots of people get started in this. And you say to yourself, if I can build a small one, I can build a big one. The principles are generally the same. The parts are bigger.
but Bill, you got to learn how to fly. How did you learn how to fly?
That's a pretty straightforward process, Brad. You go to a flight school and you get an instructor who will take you through all the steps, and you've got to put in a certain number of flying hours with the instructor, then a certain amount by yourself. You go to ground school because there are things about aerodynamics that you need to learn. There are legal things that you need to know, how the airspace works and what some of the regulations are. So it's a rigorous process, but lots of people do it, and it's a terrific hobby.
Where were you taught?
At Simsbury Airport.
Okay.
Wow. Yep. Simsbury Airport.
Oh, yeah. We have a very good flight school there. Anybody that's interested, come on down.
Is there still that interest today from people, let's say the millennials, learning how to be a pilot?
I see people taking lessons all the time. I certainly can't give you a head count because I just don't know, but it's a busy activity. At least at Simsbury Airport it is.
Mm-hmm. 20 minutes after 8 o'clock, lots of aviation shows are there in the good old USA, Bill?
Yes, sir. The biggest of which is at Oshkosh, Wisconsin, which typically occurs in late July or August of every year, and 10,000 airplanes come to the show.
Wow.
And 500,000 spectators.
10,000 yes. aircraft?
Yeah. And
have you ever been?
Five or six times,
wow.
Yes. It's an absolute blast. You don't even have to like airplanes to have fun there. During that week, it is the world's busiest airport.
Wow.
The airplanes land sometimes two and three at a time in a steady stream. And it's sponsored by the Experimental Aircraft Association, which is kind of the home organization of home building, as we were discussing earlier.
Now, you mentioned and touched upon it briefly, but explain again for our audience, because I still hear people say after all these years, as they see a plane in the sky, they marvel. How does that thing get up there? So explain how that thing gets up there.
Do you want the simple explanation
yes.
or the three-hour version?
Yeah.
The simple version is that the curvature of the wing of an airplane is designed such that there is a difference in pressure of the air on the top and the bottom sides, with the bottom side being greater pressure, which has the effect of pushing it up. That's the very simple
right.
version. But for that to happen, the airplane has to be moving through the air, as we were saying earlier,
right.
at a certain speed to create that lift. If it's not moving that fast, then the airplane can stall.
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Yeah.
So I've heard also, what is the most dangerous time, if there is one, in an airplane? Is it taking off or landing?
Taking off is relatively the most dangerous because you're low and fairly slow, and if you have to put the airplane down, you may not have as many choices of places to go as if you were up at altitude.
So when that plane is barreling down the runway, it's trying to build up that difference in air pressure for lift?
Yep.
Okay.
And at a certain point, you have enough speed so that it can lift off.
Mm-hmm. How do you know when you have enough?
There are two ways you know. One is you know the airplane and what speed that is, depending on the amount of weight in the airplane. The other way is that you can feel it, because mm-hmm. the stick or the yoke that you're pulling on actually has air forces on it.
Okay.
And it feels heavier and heavier and has more and more resistance.
So when you're pulling on that yoke, that's when the plane lifts off the ground?
You have to pull on the yoke for that to happen, because you're pointing the nose up when you do that,
mm-hmm.
and the airplane climbs away.
For you, what's it feel like as a pilot barreling down that runway?
It's a great thrill. I've done it I don't know how many thousand times, and every single time is like the first.
Wow.
I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah. And what's it like up there being in control? You mentioned there's certain rules and regulations you have to follow. Are there, for example, traffic lanes in the air?
The answer is fairly complex, but let me simplify it by saying that if you're going between distant points, there may be airways, so-called, almost like highways mm-hmm. in the sky, that you can follow. If you're just flying locally, there are certain zones, and you get to know what they are and what the rules are in each of those zones, and you have to talk to the air traffic controllers or not, and you have to fly at certain altitudes and speeds, and this is all part of the learning process when you learn how to fly. Very complex to describe in
right.
a few words, but ordinary people can learn how to do it.
The aircrafts that you've built a couple of, okay, how fast do they go?
One of the first one that I built had a top speed of about 150 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. The second one was a kit airplane, and that had a top speed of just over 200.
Wow.
The trick is most airplanes don't fly at top speed all the time because it uses a lot of fuel. Most airplanes fly at what's called cruising speed, mm-hmm. which is a lower number. It's faster than a car in most cases,
sure.
of course.
And you don't have to worry about traffic lights.
Exactly.
What about the furthest you've ever flown?
I tend not to fly long distances. Mm-hmm. I've gone as far as out to Cape Cod and down to New Jersey and upstate New York. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
The fun thing about flying is that you get to decide the kind of flying that you do.
Right.
It isn't a rigid thing. It's like boating. I'm not a boater, but I can imagine if you just want to cruise around the harbor, you can do that. If you want to go some distance, you can do that too.
Do you have to file a flight pattern for every flight you take?
The answer is no. If you are flying in bad weather, you need to have an instrument rating, which is a whole separate level of mm-hmm. training, and you have to file a flight plan. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you don't have to, but it's considered a good idea to file because if anything happens, they know when you're expected to arrive. If you don't arrive,
right.
they can start looking.
Now, the aircraft that you built, two-seaters?
Yes, both cases.
Yeah. Have you ever had to fly in bad weather?
Had to. I don't fly in situations where I have to do anything.
Right.
The part of this is judgment. Mm-hmm. You just don't put yourself into situations that could be dangerous. But I have flown in bad weather, bad weather is the wrong term, in low visibility
right.
and so forth. You dare not fly near thunderstorms, for example.
Right.
That's really bad weather. Mm-hmm. Even airliners fly around thunderstorms.
Right. How high can your planes go?
Probably 12,000 feet in
That's
my case.
Pretty good.
If you get above that, you need to have oxygen,
right.
which many home builds do.
Yeah.
Just the ones that I built just were not designed to be high altitude.
How high do you usually fly?
Just a couple thousand feet or 3,000 or 4,000.
Oh, the view must be phenomenal.
Oh, it is. That's part of the fun.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And how often do you fly?
Well, I try to get out once every couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
In the winter, it's a little harder, not necessarily because of the snow or anything, but because it's cold.
Sure.
Anything you do outside, can be limited.
Does the plane handle differently in cold weather?
Yes. Interesting phenomenon. The colder it is, the better the performance of the airplane.
Really?
The air is denser. And that makes the engine run with more power, but it also gives the airplane more lift. There are more molecules of air passing over the wing than in hot weather. In fact, the reverse is a concern. If in very hot weather you can lose enough lift that at certain airports you have to be very careful that you have enough runway to be able to get the required amount of lift to take off.
If you could say one thing to people who fly for, not actually pilot the plane, but who have to fly and are afraid of flying, getting on these jets, these 747s, whatever, what would you tell them? I mean, for example, they get nervous if the plane starts to shake. What would you tell them?
If somebody is just absolutely that fearful, it's hard to say what you can tell them because we all have our own built-in fears.
Right.
But if you want to look at it rationally, I would urge people to go to an airport, to a flight school, and you can get at most flight schools something called a pinch hitter course, which will teach non-pilots how an airplane works, and in some cases actually give them the experience of being in a small airplane and seeing what happens. When you're an airliner, obviously you can't see what's going on up front, but when you're in a small airplane, you can see everything, and it's reassuring because you can see that everything's okay.
A great question. We've got about 45 seconds. Caller from Newington wants to know, what is causing all of these local plane crashes?
That's a mystery. It's way out of norm. Most of them appear to be pilot error, although I'm probably wrong to even say that because I don't think many of them have been investigated. But it would appear at a glance that it's pilot error, which I'm sad to say.
Wow. You have been so informative, Bill.
Well, fabulous.
Thank you.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was fun
being
here.
Coming in.
It was great to meet you, and we got to get out to the airport.
All right.
Let's go someday.
Sounds like a plan.
Huh?
Yeah.
Really. I'd love to go out
like
to
a
the
plan.
Airport.
All right. Give me a call. We'll set it up.
All right.
Okay.
Awesome.
We're gonna do that, Dan. I got to get there.
Yeah.
I won't be right till I do it.
You bet.
Okay. Coming up to 8:30, my friends, and we will be back. And thank you. Bill Thomas, Simsbury Car and Fly-In Show. Big, big time in Simsbury.